Hello, folks. It's Arjorie, and you are listening to Why We Do the Work. I have Mason with me again here today to finish up the conversation that we started last episode. This is the second part of that. I want to be sure to thank Beyond Toxics for sponsoring this show, and you can always reach me at aab@beyondtoxics.org. So like I said, Mason is here today for a continuation of the last conversation about gas stations, leaking underground storage tanks, some of those health impacts. So we made these two parts because it's such a complicated topic, and we feel that we were not able to really get into what's happening locally. So that's why we broke it up into two parts. And Mason, thank you for that suggestion. And I guess I want to start this out with a little bit smooth and easy. So I want to just ask, like, what was your good thing that happened? It doesn't have to be this week. It doesn't have to be yesterday. It could have been something that happened a month ago.
Well, my mom, who currently lives in Hood River, my hometown, is moving out to Eugene in the next couple of months with my brother. So I am going to have my whole family out here living in Eugene. And I am so excited because it has been 3 years since we've all lived in the same town. We all like spent one summer while I was in college living at my mom's cabin. And so anyways, it'll be the first time in a few years that all of us have lived in the same city. And we're just looking forward to like standing family dinners and stuff. And she came out and looked at some houses yesterday. So we were just really excited about that. And I can't wait to see how that evolves.
Oh my gosh, I love that for you. What made them decide they wanted to move here? Were they like, we're just ready to get out of this area? We want to be somewhere closer to Mason?
Yeah, we love Hood River and the Columbia River Gorge, but it's a little bit small. And my mom has lived there her whole life, except for a short stint in Denver. And so I think she's just looking forward to being in a new environment, slightly more, you know, urban, and just like new job opportunities and stuff. And then my brother is just kind of a go with the flow dude. So he's like, sure, I'll come out to Eugene. Why not? And my sister also lives here. So obviously, you know, I think she's looking forward to living near her and I.
Her kids. That's wonderful. Yeah. I know she's super excited about that. My good thing is not so warm and fuzzy like that, like family coming or anything, but my good thing is not just my good thing. It's the good thing for Eugene, West Eugene, a win for the community. And that is, you guys all know that I've been talking about the public health overlay zone a bunch. Well, it's not completely implemented yet, but on October 18th of 2023, City Council voted unanimously to ask city staff to make a draft of incorporating public health into their land use codes. Hopefully this will be like citywide, you know, right? We wanted it to start in West Eugene, and that's, you know, that's where we started this whole fight with. But if it's citywide, that's awesome, because the rest of the city needs to be protected from polluters as well. But for now, we are working behind the scenes. You know, we're doing whatever we can to do to support the movement of the city to be able to help get this implemented. It is a brand new thing, and they're not calling it the public health overlay zone. And I think they're calling it public health development standards. But we've been calling it the PHAS. We've been calling it public health overlay zone. That's how you all know it. But that's a really super great win. And it's like a historical win for West Eugene and for Eugene as a whole. So it's awesome that you all have been able to hear and listen to us talk about this and me talking about getting it in zone. Well, it's on its way to doing that, and it's not completely like implemented, but the conversation is definitely there, and it's a definite win for Eugene. So that's my good thing. And, you know, I know that you're excited about it too, Mason. We've been working on that ever since you started working there, ever since I started working there. We've been doing public health overlay zone, and it took a long time, a lot of testimony, a lot of meetings with elected officials, a lot of pull from the community. And I just want to thank the community for doing that, because it wouldn't have been able to happen without the input and the feedback and the tirelessness of the community. So thank you, Eugene. Right. So at that same work session where they said, yes, the PHAWs, we're going to do that, they also were talking about gas stations and what that could look like for Eugene. So during that meeting, and it's recorded, if anybody wants to watch it, you can go to YouTube and watch the work session about, you know, the gas stations and the PHAWs, and we were all excited about that. But they did the same during that same work session, they talked about gas stations. And before we get too far ahead in the conversation, I want to stage this conversation that I have, that I'm having with Mason, so that we can go a little bit deeper into what's happening locally. So Mason, just forgive me for a minute. I'm just going to rattle off some stuff here and then we're going to jump in. Okay. It's going to be me for a minute. So during the work session, a city staff representative noted that there are 42 gas stations in Eugene that have been, and six have been established since 2018. And Mason, you said before, I can't remember the number that you said that there were gas stations, but we'll get into why it's not called a gas station and all that. But I don't remember if you said that there were more than 42, but this representative said that there were 42 gas stations. And of course, they mentioned the ones on Highway 99 that are like right across the street from each other. They talked about those. They talked about some places where they are not allowed. They're not allowed in parks, recs, and open spaces, natural resource, chase nodes. I don't know what that is.
I could tell you if you'd like.
Yes, tell me. What is a chase node?
I looked these up because I was curious. so this was this along with the nodal development overlays are specific zoning tools that the city uses to do like really specific types of development and mixed use development, or incorporating, you know, some pre-existing buildings into new development. So there's a lot of rules that people have to follow when constructing new buildings. And they're often these cookie cutter specific rules for specific zoning. And this allows the city to make certain nuances and exceptions to those rules within a specific designated area. And this is how the city staff member presented it in the meeting, specifically looking at the SCN chase nodes and the nodal development overlays. So I know they're kind of funny and a little bit in the weeds, but they work similarly to these other overlay zones that you have mentioned, like the downtown riverfront, which allows for a lot of mixed use development, and the Broadway and East Campus overlays, which prohibit certain types of development, such as gas stations, especially in East Campus, is one example. And that's because that neighborhood came together and said that we don't want any sort of automobile infrastructure like car mechanics or gas stations in our neighborhood because it will negatively affect the character of it. And so they got those overlay zones passed as a way to make sure that that type of development could not happen in those sections of the city.
I wonder how long it took them to get those overlay zones happening.
Me too. It's not something I ever really looked into, but yeah. I totally had the same, like, how, what, where, when. Yeah,
who voted on it? Like, what was there testimony involved? Or was it just because it's in an area that's a little bit more affluent than the areas that we are talking about? So maybe there was a lot more participation in that we don't see. So he also went on to say that there was no definition of gas station in the land codes. And he said that, and this is something that we talked about as well, Mason. He said that because they're not just selling gas in these places. Some of these places are framed in a convenience store. So they call them service stations because most of the time they're attached to stores, and generations past, they have been attached to car shops. Like, you know, you'll see in like the 1950s movies, and there's a guy with his cigarettes rolled up in his shirt, and he's working in the shop, and there's also gas there. So they used to call those service stations. It's also important to note that the city isn't the only entity in charge of gas stations. Each focuses on different points of gas stations, and that these are happening in conjunction with the land use codes. So the places that the representatives mentioned were federal, which is the EPA, and then we have state, which is DEQ, We have local, which is LRAPA, and that is Lane Regional Air Protection Agency, and they regulate the air in Lane County. The Eugene Fire Marshal is also involved in that, and Eugene Building Permit Stations is involved in that as well. So could you tell us a little bit about what each one of these entities does and what they have to do with gas stations in the first place?
Yes, and I'm going to keep this fairly broad for the audience. So at the federal level, we have the Environmental Protection Agency, or the EPA, and they are tasked with administrating rules as set by Congress and the White House, right? And so one of the most famous rules that we spent a lot of time talking about last episode is the rules for cleaning up leaking underground storage tanks. That was a federal policy, and it was created by the EPA, and the Department of Environmental Quality in Oregon was in charge of creating a set of rules and policies that meets the EPA's expectations in regards to cleaning up leaking underground storage tanks. So the EPA determined a framework through which leaking underground storage tanks need to be cleaned up, how it needs to relate to public health and land use, and that there needs to be some sort of financing mechanism for it. And so the DEQ did this, and they created their underground storage tank cleanup program, and it is funded by pollution liability insurance. So in Oregon, we require gas stations purchase some liability insurance for the pollution that they might cause, or that they show that they are able to pay for a cleanup in another fashion. But the liability insurance I referred to is by far the most common one, with over 90% of service stations doing it via that route. Separately, we talked about ambient air quality problems last episode and how volatile organic compounds can escape from fuel storage and get into the air around and affect people. And so both the EPA and the DEQ have a rulemaking committees that suggest different practices for gas stations to adhere to, and sometimes do a little bit more than suggest and say that they have to. And so these are pollution control devices, and they are placed in regards to infrastructure of the tank itself where gas is stored, and also the pump technology that gets the gas out of the tank and into your car. And so the nozzle types often have various pieces of engineering that help reduce the amount of volatile organic compounds, and those are regulated by the DEQ and by the EPA. And then at the local level, the Lane Regional Air Protection Agency is in charge of administering those regulations and making sure that they are being complied with. And so it does that on the Lane County level, which Eugene is inside of. And lastly, you mentioned the locals or other local organizations such as the Eugene Fire Marshal. Hazardous substances have to be stored in a safe way, and they have to be clearly marked. So that if there's a fire or emergency, fire worker who arrives on site is immediately able to look around for key context clues and see, oh, there's fuel stored here, which means we need to be worried about explosion, or, oh, this is stored here and we need to be worried about, you know, evacuating the surrounding population. And so the fire marshal certifies that. And in the case of service stations, the two most common things that the fire marshal are going to be regulating is, one, the underground storage tank full of diesel or gasoline, et cetera. And then often at most service stations, you're going to have propane storage and dispensing. And that's the other hazardous material that the fire marshal is often going to be regulating. And lastly, there is Eugene building permit rules that they have to follow. And those, as you mentioned, go on for erosion control and on-site water management discharge, which aren't hugely consequential when it comes to the effects of fossil fuel pollution. And anyhow, I know a lot less about those specific roles personally.
So Mason, I appreciate you going into that a little bit more. I think that opens up the conversation. It connects the last conversation that we had with what we're talking about today. And the city was excited about public engagement with this. And there are three tiers in which they are going to make sure that there is some public engagement. So tier one is to just ban gas stations. Tier two is to regulate the siting of gas stations. And tier three is to develop standards of new gas stations. That first tier is the one that I feel everybody's thinking about. Should we ban gas stations? Should we do that? So the very first tier, I was glad that they talked about that being the first one, the ban gas stations, because that put like a punch, like this is what we're talking about. So Mason, let's talk about those tiers. About the banning of gas stations, the tier needed to be to define gas stations, because I talked about there's no real definition for that. So let's talk about those three tiers.
Yeah. The city staff was trying to lay out to city councilors sort of the various different options that they had in the way of this topic, and trying to define their scope of powers and three different types of solutions. And they labeled these as tiers because they sort of go from the most blunt and overarching and sweeping to the most fine and specifically tailored rules for gas stations to follow in the realm of land use. So in tier one, first we need to define what a gas station is. As you mentioned, right now these are called service stations, and they are worded in such a way that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be storing and dispensing gasoline. So we should probably define what a gas station is in the city's land use code. And this was the first thing that the city staff member said, that this was a perfect opportunity for us to come back to a poorly defined concept and really flesh out what a gas station means and how it's different from, let's say, a service station that would service electric vehicles. And so it's important to define that difference. And the reason why in this tier one it's so important is because we would be placing either a moratorium or a permanent ban on gas stations. And the city staff mentioned that these are two different things. A moratorium is a temporary prohibition on the construction of gas stations, while a ban is permanent, long-lasting, and says that we cannot construct new gas stations until that is changed. So they called this a high-risk term or a high-risk tier option. And the reason they did that is, you know, recently, and we've discussed this in a separate episode across the United States, there have been a lot of cities to consider banning the construction of natural gas infrastructure in residential homes. And that has faced a lot of court challenges and lawsuits by the fossil fuel industry. So the city mentioned that this tier was at a higher risk for a lawsuit. And I believe that they were sort of taking stock of these lessons learned from recent fights with the fossil fuel industry when it comes to making electrification happen through land use change. So they're a bit worried about that, as we'll go into in this podcast. A couple cities have already done this and haven't faced any lawsuits. So from our perspective at Beyond Toxics, we don't see that as much of a risk as the city does. But we'll get into that. The second tier, as you mentioned, controls the siting of gas stations. So instead of outright banning them, let's come up with some rules of where they should be constructed. And the biggest one is a buffer zone away from residential areas, schools, parks, and maybe other sensitive land uses. And you and I have talked about this in relation to the public health overlay zone. This is a minimum setback distance. The two values that were thrown out were 500 feet and 1,000 feet. And those were the ones that the city councilors were talking about. So saying that if a gas station is constructed, it must be constructed 500 or 1,000 feet away from any residential areas. And one city council really importantly mentioned that this is a completely normal thing to do. And she used the example of marijuana dispensaries are required to be constructed 1,000 feet away from any residences or schools. And this is for nuisance concerns. People don't want to live near pot shops and don't want a pot shop constructed near their home. And so, you know, this isn't even a public health concern, was the reason why this original policy was passed. And so one counselor argued that if we're allowed to have these setbacks for nuisance concerns, then surely we should make that a reality for actual really big public health impacts. And the last one that you mentioned are tier three, and these are special standards for specific types of uses within a certain zoning type. So this would be for defining gas stations, right? And so it would say any gas station constructed has to follow these rules. It doesn't decide where they're located. It doesn't ban them, but it says that once you locate, you've got to follow these. And so that might be creating minimum setback distances from the sidewalk, which is the minimum distance that a building is constructed away from a sidewalk. The size and scale limitations. So limiting the number of fuel pumps or requiring that electric vehicle charging infrastructure is built alongside fossil fuel refueling infrastructure. And I am guessing that we are going to get into the pros and cons of some of these. And
yeah. Thank you, Mason, for getting into that. I think that that is important for folks to understand from last episode and this episode to really get a vision of what it is that this, what we're talking about here and what City Council is talking about. So that was a lot for us to talk about here at the beginning of the conversation, but I think that it was necessary for us to frame that so that we can really get into the weeds of this. So Mason, during the work session and just a little bit ago, we talked about those tiers, tier one, tier two, and tier three. Tier one is no gas stations. Tier two is where these gas stations would be. Tier three is how those gas stations are built. So Mason, when we were watching that work session, were there any comments from council about any three of these tiers?
Yes. So in terms of tier one, there were two options that were considered. And if I recall correctly, I don't know if there was a motion made in the way of this tier, but this was about banning or temporarily banning through a moratorium the construction of gas stations at all. So the council kind of considered, they were the most hesitant about banning outright and permanently banning the construction mm-hmm. of gas stations outright. But they seemed a little bit more warm to the idea of temporarily banning the construction of gas stations until we figure out what we as a city want to do about this. And you and I, through our work, have advocated that we should at minimum place a moratorium while we figure this out, because there are gas stations being constructed really close to residences and right across the street right now. And we do see an immediate public health benefit by hitting the pause button while we deliberate on this instead of allowing more to be constructed in the meantime.
Yeah. So that, yeah, I was excited that city staff said, it's a possibility. We'll look into it. They didn't say, no, we're not going to do that. They said it's a possibility. So I do want folks to know that I think that city is trying. What about tier two? Was there a motion made at all about that?
So in my eyes, this was probably the most warm reception we had to, you know, the idea of regulating gas stations. And a lot of city councilors were able to get behind it because we regulate the siting of certain facilities already. Use the example of dispensaries, right? Dispensaries are required to be constructed 1,000 feet away from residential areas and schools. So people didn't want people selling marijuana or smoking it, you know, nearby their residence or the school. And for largely nuisance reasons, this policy was passed. And so a couple of counselors said that, you know, we're talking about real public health consequences and higher rates of cancer for kids and, you know, increased burdens of asthma and other respiratory illnesses as a direct result from just living near perfectly functioning gas stations. And so they thought that a 500-foot or 1,000-foot buffer is a perfectly reasonable ask and regulation for the city to do in terms of a tier two regulating where gas stations are cited, and this is based on scientific evidence that shows there are heightened levels of benzene and other volatile organic compounds at least 525 feet away from gas stations. So this number is, you know, not just pulled from thin air. It was really well thought out, and I think that's why the city councilors made a motion in this direction, and that's, I think, where we saw some of the most support for this type of policy in terms of real public health impacts.
So tier three, Mason, that was the how these gas stations would be constructed. And so when we were watching that, when you saw that, was there anything that was a highlight for you during that tier three, when they were having that conversation? Did anybody at council mention that?
Yeah. And so I would say, you know, next to tier one, this was also one of the most contentious discussions. And this was a requirement to construct electric vehicle chargers based on the amount of gasoline pumps. So saying that for every gasoline pump, you must have one electric vehicle charger, or for every two pumps, one electric vehicle charger. And this policy is inspired by actually what Germany has done, and they have required this in all of their gasoline service stations. And the reason why this was really critically received is because people are, you know, according to most analysts and people who look at economic behavior, there is very little reason to believe that people will be driving to like a service station to charge their electric vehicles and will instead prefer to do it in parking lots of shopping centers or at their own home. And people will be unlikely to be willing to sit at a gas station, you know, not a very pleasant environment to be in, for 30 minutes while their vehicle charges. And this negates a lot of the public health arguments and concerns of sitting there and being exposed to volatile organic compounds. If I'm sitting charging my electric vehicle at a gas station, I am breathing in heightened levels of benzene and volatile organic compounds for 30 minutes. And so a lot of counselors were sort of just very turned off, if you will, by this idea. Yeah. They were very like, oh, I would never do that myself, and I have
why would I want to sit in my car and smell gas, is what one of the counselors said. Nobody wants to sit in their car and have their vehicle charged up sitting in a gas station. Like, doesn't that like not even talk about public health? Like, aren't we talking about public health here? So you want people to sit in the gas station and charge their car? That was a conversation. So I, you know, while we were talking about that, I was wondering, like, why aren't there charging stations at rest stops? Or why hasn't there been like a, I don't know, like a charging station built where you can have like, you kids can get out and have a minute, you know, they have a little park to play in? Or
Ardrey, this is such an important question, because you're right. Who wants to sit for 30 minutes in their car doing nothing while their vehicle charges, and much less breathe in polluted air? And this is the reason why gas stations are facing an existential threat as a business model. So the Boston Consulting Group has estimated that 80% of gas stations are going to be unprofitable in the next 10 years due to widespread electric vehicle adoption. And it's not because that they can't charge electric vehicles, right? This tier three proposal would make it so that they could. It's because it's going to be boring. So what they recommended actually was that if you're a gas station and you want to survive the next 20 years as an economic institution, you're going to have to create entertainment centers or have a restaurant, mm-hmm. or have like an arcade or something for people to be able to play games, have a park, right? And so your point that we should be instituting these at rest stops where there often is a little bit of nature to walk around in is such a good point. And a lot of gas stations are going to have to figure out how to attract consumers to be able to sit there. Mm-hmm. And this gets into the point that a lot of electric vehicle, which I'm going to say EV, electric vehicle from now on, a lot of EV charging infrastructure is going to need to be placed at places where people want to hang out. So that's going to be at the grocery store, you know, in the parking lot, be able to plug in your car while you go grocery shopping, or at the movies, or at a restaurant, or at a mall, or at your home while you're hanging out, or at the gym, right? So they're going to have to be places where you are conveniently occupied with an activity for 30 minutes or longer while your vehicle charges, or at least at minimum have some sort of entertainment, you know, for consumers and kids alike. And so that's the reason why gas stations are really not going to do so hot in the next 10 years.
Yeah, you know, before we started having this discussion, I never thought about there not being those charging stations at rest stops. Like, that to me seems like the first place you would want those things to be, because people are traveling, you know, they're going far distances. At some point they're going to need to charge that. And you've got four kids in the back of the minivan, and where are you going to go sit in the gas station? So that's just something that we can definitely continue to talk more about, I'm sure.
Exactly. And, you know, one of our wishes as an organization that we had and, you know, we decided not to put in the report, was advocating at a county level for some of our major highways to be designated as alternative fuel corridors. I-5 was, so that is going to take advantage of a pot of money from the federal government dedicated to building out electric vehicle charging infrastructure. I imagine a lot of it will be placed at rest stops, because that's a really convenient and common sense place to locate electric vehicle charging infrastructure. But, you know, Highway 126 that goes from Florence, you know, through Eugene and to Bend would have been another really cool highway to select as an alternative fuel corridor, as well as Highway 99, which goes up from Eugene to Corvallis and, you know, through the Willamette Valley eventually to Portland, would have been another really great location. And the reason we omitted it from the report was actually because a lot of the money is already earmarked, and there will be need to be more money made allowed for this program before more corridors can be assigned. But you know it, that we'll be there encouraging the city and county to do this if and when more money is made available.
Yeah, for sure. As we were talking about EVs, the council said that one of the councilors said that that should be two separate conversations between electric vehicles and gas stations. And how do you feel about that? Do you think it should be two separate conversations? And what are some of our asks or recommendations that you were talking about in the report?
Well, we primarily, you know, advocated for the moratorium. And that's because this is likely going to have the most concrete and large impacts on public health. By preventing the construction of future gas stations, we're going to prevent all of the public health impacts by those emissions that escape. And if, you know, any of those facilities were to leak, we would have prevented one more leaking underground storage tank. So, I mean, that's really what we're as an organization are advocating for. We believe that that is, you know, a very common sense policy when we're facing, you know, widespread adoption of electric vehicles. EWEB predicts that 60 to 80% of vehicles on Eugene's roads will be electric by the year 2035. And that was before the Inflation Reduction Act was passed, which is the single biggest pot of money ever created for electric infrastructure and encouraging consumers to purchase electric vehicles in the history of the world and the United States. And, you know, that was one of Biden's landmark legislative things that he has done. And so, you know, our own utility has predicted, as a result, a really high adoption of electric vehicles. You know, in terms of the city choosing to separate these conversations, I can understand why they chose to do that, as this is a very complicated conversation. And the truth is decreasing, you know, fossil fuel infrastructure and increasing electric vehicle infrastructure are two really important goals. However, you know, I think the reason why these were separated is because a lot of councilors can get behind increasing electric vehicle charging infrastructure, while not a lot of councilors may be able to get behind decreasing fossil fuel infrastructure. I think the sentiment is let's use honey, not vinegar, to attract, you know, the fruit flies, right? So let's encourage citizens of Eugene to switch over by building out this infrastructure and not by banning the other. And I understand, you know, why politically I think that is an easier task to get done, but it really doesn't address the core concern from our part, which is the public health consequences. And so I understand why the two are separated, and I think it's important in terms of a climate conversation to build out this electric vehicle charging infrastructure. You and I talk about disparities in the city's character and land use and construction choices a lot. One of them is that there is very little electric vehicle charging infrastructure outside of downtown in the University of Oregon, i.e. there is very little in West Eugene. So this, you know, I think it's good if we were to build more out, and especially build it in West Eugene and make it available to everyone as people purchase electric and hybrid vehicles. And I really do hope that we go forward at least with a mandatory minimum buffer for public health reasons. And as an organization, we're still really have hope that that moratorium or ban will, you know, ultimately be passed, especially since other cities in the United States have already done it.
Yeah. And it doesn't sound like, I mean, council did not say no. They didn't say no. They didn't say yes. They didn't say no, but they didn't, we didn't give up on the public health overlay zone. So we're not going to just give up on this either. So in the report, it says that we think Eugene's zoning codes discourage transparency. So when reviewing those zoning codes, it was discovered that many of the gas stations used the word convenience under the guise that they were operating as a convenience store, meaning the gas station's part is secondary. So we've talked about this a couple of different times. Do you think that like a normal everyday person would be thinking that way? And how do you think we could frame a conversation so that folks can understand the difference between a gas station and a gas station that has convenience store? So
yeah, I think ahead. This goes back to, you know, the service station definition, mm-hmm. definition and you know, the way land use policy is done in the city of Eugene. And I think the best way to explain this is sort of to imagine, you know, the public input section of this. So, you know, when a city is approving zoning changes or certain types of construction, there are often times for public input regarding a certain topic. And so gas stations are what's called an allowed use in C2, commercial 2 zoning. They're allowed to just be constructed. End of story. There's no public input, and the city actually can't even tell them no because it's an allowed use. But in other types of zoning, it is a conditional use, meaning that they have to prove that it will not negatively affect the surrounding zoning uses. And that's when public comment is often invited, so that people can have a moment to testify whether or not this construction will impact them, and that they have a right to say no. And so you're right to say that when this happens, that the word convenience store is often used, and then the service station is listed as an accessory use, meaning it's not the primary use, mm-hmm. but it is a use that will come along with it. And so if you receive an email or a letter in the mail from the city council that says, hey, someone is looking to build a convenience store across the street from you, as you pointed out, you're probably going to be down. I mean, I'd be excited to have a place where I could purchase some snacks or, you know, get some milk. I, you know, just happen to need for a baking recipe, or I ran out of dish soap and maybe they have a small thing of dish soap there or whatever. Or if like energy drinks are your thing. Yeah, convenient. You're just going to go, yeah, that's fine. And plus, it's really hard to articulate how a convenience store inconveniences land use. So that's kind of difficult, right? Whereas if you're right, if it were to say a service station, you know, that might still be a hard thing for someone to really go, that's a gas station, and to clearly understand and have a clear image come to mind when they read this notice from the city. But the other reason that, you know, we sort of came to this conclusion in the report was due to an instance in which a landowner wanted to change the zoning of their land from commercial one, which does not allow gas stations or service stations, to commercial two, which does. And they filed for what's called an up zone. And during an up zoning, neighboring residents and other, you know, people who live in the area are allowed to make comments on whether or not they are okay with that and how it would positively or negatively impact their lives. And so in the case of a neighborhood in West Eugene, Alon Barger, a landowner wanted to change their land from a commercial one to a commercial two. And so they filed this request to the city, and the city said, okay, we'll go forward with it. Let's have a moment for public testimony. And they sent out letters to the nearest few hundred residents about this. And a few residents actually showed up and testified that they are concerned this would allow a gas station to be constructed and that that would add more traffic to the area, that that would add more idling cars and pollution, and that they're also concerned about the pollution that would result from storing fossil fuels and having that gas station infrastructure nearby. And so they testified about this. And the lawyer that was representing the landowner who wanted to have the zoning change go through told the city that while they understand the concerns that the citizens are poising, as the city's land use code is written, these are not concerns that are allowed to be considered by the city when considering an upzoning change. So basically, he was able to say, you know, when we read the law, their comments are off topic and are conjecture and not relevant to the matter at hand. Legally, you know, you and I would argue that these seem pretty important, and we would want to value these people's concerns over the impacts of a proposed zoning change. So the city said, we can't consider these comments. And so because there were no negative comments recorded that are legally considerable, they approved the zoning change. And then the landowner came and said, I'd like to construct a gas station here. And because it's a C2 zone, I'm legally allowed to do that. And the city said yes, and there's no way for public testimony or any way for the city to say no. So if I were on the receiving end of this as a resident, I'd be pretty discouraged. And so that's why we came to the conclusion or report that it discouraged public input in this specific instance. And, you know, this is a concern, you know, for people who we want to be able to have a voice in what their community looks like. And it's especially concerning when we think about these other overlay zones that already prohibited construction of gas stations, right?
You know, I'm glad that you were talking about the weeds of it, because they made a point to say public engagement, public engagement, public engagement during their work session. So what ends up happening in those situations, like what happened in West Eugene with the gas station that you were just describing, is that a lot of times people are getting these notices in the mail and they're not reading it. It looks like junk mail. So then they're misinformed. They don't know what's going on in their community. And unfortunately, it's easy to be able to just construct something because nobody's really saying anything about it. I'm proud of those two people that went and did testimony, but everybody doesn't do that. And everybody doesn't just look and be like, oh, wow, that, what did Beyond Toxic say about this in their report? Whoa, maybe I should say, I don't want this gas station near my house. Why didn't I know about this? Because they went ahead and built that gas station. It's there. So it's, I'm glad that they were talking about the public engagement part. I'm glad that we have the wherewithal to know that there is kind of discourages transparency. And that's maybe not intentional, but it happens because a lot of times it's junk mail to people that they're getting out. So it's important for organizations like us to be able to shine a light on the things that are going on, that everybody's not digging around and being nosy and looking to see what C2 means and see what all the nodes mean and all that stuff that you were telling me about at the beginning of the episode. Everybody's not doing that. So that's how people keep continually get impacted by pollution, because a lot of times people think, oh, well, somebody else is doing it. Somebody else has got it. And I'm guilty of having said that before working with Beyond Toxics. I'm guilty of living in West Eugene and saying, oh, well, you know, there's a gas station there. Well, somebody's talking about it, right? But everybody starts to think that way, and then nothing gets done, and then there's a gas station in your neighborhood.
Or in this case, they did show up and comment, and because yes. they don't have the time and expertise to know the weeds of the legal system, to your point, you know, they weren't able to have anything done about it because it's such a complicated land use system.
And that's discouraging. That's like, okay, well, now I can't do anything about it. And that makes you not want to do anything about anything, because it's like you've lost that trust of, we're supposed to be taken care of and somebody's supposed to be doing this. And then you just get in a sacrifice zone, like what's going on in West Eugene. So Mason, are there places in the United States that have adopted this ban, not just a moratorium, but have completely said, you know what? No, you're not doing that gas station over here. You can't. Is there a place in the United States or anywhere that you know of that has done that?
So when we wrote this report and we brought this to the city council, we really wanted to be able to provide them with a concrete example and an action that has been taken and that they have the same ability to take. And so we went and looked at the policy of Petaluma, California, which is a small ex-urban suburban city just north of the Bay Area and south of Santa Rosa. And so a city had done a number of things that we've talked about today. One, they defined a service station, and they said a service station is anything that fuels cars. And then they did sort of a mix of this tier one and tier three thing we were talking about, where they said at service stations, we can no longer have the construction of additional fuel pumps or construct new underground storage tanks for fossil fuel storage. But they left the door open for hydrogen, which might be a really unique fuel used for long distance transportation for heavy freight, like semi-trucks, et cetera. And they also allowed there to be electric vehicle charging infrastructure built at service stations that exist or at ones that are constructed. But they said no more fossil fuel infrastructure, no more constructing more pumps, no more constructing additional underground storage tanks. And it's been successful. And, you know, they've had the policy stand for 2 years, almost 3 years now, and it hasn't been legally challenged in any substantial way. And not only that, but a lot of other cities in California were inspired to do similar things. And so a lot of nearby ex-urban cities considered the policy. Some of them passed it. And one of the coolest examples that they inspired was actually like Car Capital USA, the most suburban, sprawly city, Los Angeles. Actually, I think the most suburban, sprawled city is technically Atlanta. But when you and I think about suburban sprawl, you know, most people have LA come to mind. And so LA even considered this policy. And I don't know in the weeds what's happened with it, but it actually came before their city council, and they at least had one debate about it, which is huge and something that I even, you know, would have never considered a possibility. So this really isn't that, you know, novel or crazy. It's been done, and it's been considered by cities of a wide variety of sizes, including ones about the size of Eugene.
When did all that happen with Petaluma, California? What year-ish was that?
It was debated at least in the year 2021, and I imagine 2020, but I haven't looked at the records of all of the meetings. But the policy was passed unanimously by Petaluma's city council in March 2021.
Wow. Unanimously. We love to see all those hands going up like that. So it can happen. It's not a mute endeavor. You know, like this is something that has been done. It's something that can happen. It did happen with the public health overlay zone. I'm hoping that that can be a model for other communities in Oregon and worldwide, statewide, all the things, because I think that it's necessary. So I think that this is also something that can be done as well. And I don't know how much testimony we have done on this at city council. So I think that maybe some of those talking points. We can take some talking points out of the report and get a little cohort of people together that want to, that have passion about this. There needs to be testimony. There needs to be that outreach of people saying, we don't want this, because that's how it gets done, is to have the people who actually live in these communities say something about it. Like the folks that came in and testified for that gas station over in West Eugene that didn't need to be there. So Mason, during our conversation about gas stations and the tears and so on and so forth, was there a motion or a mention at all about gas prices?
Yeah. So a couple of the counselors very clearly, you know, cited that there is uncertainty around how gasoline prices might be affected by such a policy. And there wasn't a motion made, but they did make a request to the city staff to get back to them on answering this question. And some of the questions that were asked is, well, how many gas stations does Eugene have compared to other cities of its size? And could banning gas stations, you know, raise prices for residents? And would that cause any problems? And so I took a very cursory look at some of these questions because I wanted to find out for myself. And one of the things I did find out is we already have far more gas stations per capita than our neighboring city, Springfield. So, you know, this concern about gasoline prices being related to, you know, the amount of gas stations you have doesn't really seem to bear any weight here, considering how our prices are very similar, if not the same, to Springfield's. But I also wanted to look up and see, like, how are gasoline prices set? And what are the predominant factors that determine it? And there are two buckets we can get into. One is global supply of petroleum. The amount of petroleum that's just available around the globe, which is dictated by production of oil-producing countries, determines, you know, how much gasoline there is, and then how much gasoline everyone wants to use is demand, right? So we have supply and demand. And on an international stage, this is really important. So you can imagine during the pandemic, we had been producing a lot of gasoline up until the pandemic, and then everything shut down abruptly. And so the demand for gasoline in people's cars or transporting things or, you know, running different facilities dropped like crazy fast, right? And so all of a sudden everybody was home and no one was traveling and no one was buying gas. And so the price of gas dropped like to a glorious like $2 a gallon, if you remember those days. And so, you know, sometimes this gets credited for other reasons, but it's really a supply and demand thing. And then as things have opened back up, and in response to the COVID wave, a lot of oil producing countries said, hey, we got to produce less gasoline so that we can make the price go up and make some more money ourselves. They reduced production. And then as demand started to pick back up, as things opened up, we've had gas prices hit an all-time high. And especially with some of the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East going on, a lot of the price raises have been related to that. And so for a while, you know, we were at like $5 a gallon in Oregon, which was unheard of in my lifetime. And so this is supply and demand, right? And that is the number one determiner for the price of gasoline around the world. And I can tell you, Eugene has incredibly little control over any of this. They can't determine what's happening in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Venezuela and these other, and Russia and massive oil-producing companies. There's just not anything they can do. And so the second bucket, they have a little bit more control over, and that's fuel taxes. So fuel taxes are set at a federal, state, and local level, and they're often used to build roads. And so road construction is often financed through fuel taxes. And so we have one for the state of Oregon, and then we have a local one for the city of Eugene. And so that is actually really the area where we can determine the price of gasoline. In towns where there is only one gas station, there has been noted to be monopoly issues, right? And instances in which gas prices are higher due to lack of competition. But in Eugene, we have between 42 and 56, depending how you count it, not to mention all of the gas stations in neighboring cities like Coburg and Springfield that are still within our metropolitan area. And so we really don't have these concerns over monopoly or oligopoly because we have an amount of competition already. And none of these gas stations would be affected by a moratorium or a minimum setback distance or a buffer. So I hear the city councilors on their concerns. I think their hearts are in the right places, but I do think that, you know, the amount of control we have over this price setting is really largely separated from this policy and has nothing to do with the policy. And there is very little, if no evidence out there about how a ban affects gasoline prices. And so when city councilors get up and say this, I hear their concern, but I would also like to point out for the audience that they weren't citing any studies or citing evidence from economic institutes. So I think the concerns are valid, but I also think that they're not related to this policy specifically.
So Mason, this is a lot to digest. This is a, you know, it's a high level conversation that I think that you were able to explain to me a lot more about what's going on with city council. And, you know, I like to see how different people interpret things. And I appreciate how you were able to interpret and articulate the things that council was saying, because I think it's really important for us to show that we are connected with council and we have a relationship with them in a way that we want to be able to represent them in a way that they should be, because we know that they're working as hard as they can on this. So I appreciate this conversation. Our report states that there are three considerations that need to be taken into account when working towards a gas station ban. There are economic risks, public health, and Eugene's commitment. Can you tell me a little bit about that statement, why, what we meant by that in the report, and do you think that those would be great talking points with Mayor Venice and City Council for testimony?
Yes. So the three points that we wanted to make is, one, public health risk, right? And we talked a whole lot about this in the last episode in relation to ambient air pollution and leaking underground storage tanks. And so placing a moratorium and or a permanent ban on a gas station would prevent a lot of those risks from being created from the construction of new gas stations. The second one is the economic risk. And you all might be thinking about the gas prices question, but actually what we're thinking about is how much leaking underground storage tanks really impact the property that they're on and the properties that they're around. They often limit the type of construction that can be placed on them in the future. They often require exorbitant amounts of money, $400,000, usually at the minimum, up to $1 million to clean up these leaking underground storage tanks. And if someone can't finance that and declares bankruptcy, then that leaking underground storage tank is going to sit there for eternity until someone does pay to clean it up. And there are examples of a coffee roaster in Portland who wanted to open up a coffee shop, and they had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to clean up the gasoline before they could open up their coffee shop. So this, to me, is an economic risk on future development. And if 80% of gas stations are likely to be unprofitable in the next 10 years, I don't want more of them in the city to be burdening future development. And the burden, the all sorts of other things that we could be doing with commercial land that are long-term profitable and contribute to the city and don't detract from public health as much. And the last one is public engagement around this topic, right? You and I discussed the ways in which our current land use code does not promote public engagement around public health impacts of certain land uses. And so we really want people to show up to the city council and testify on how gas stations have impacted them and how living near them has impacted them and whether or not they see it as a good or a bad thing, and be able to have their voices heard and to testify to the council. So we really hope that, you know, the city council listens to people, and specifically that they listen to people who are maybe more disadvantaged in this scenario. I think developers are a really powerful group of people and a powerful group of economic interests. And I do think that neighbors and people living near gas stations are less powerful and have less control over these types of land use interests. So I hope that the city council really takes to heart the neighbors of these facilities and people who are disproportionately impacted by the construction of gas stations, like regions of West Eugene, whose zoning is most conducive to construction of gas stations, while in South Eugene, you know, there's very little places where you are legally allowed to build a gas station right now. And in East Eugene, around campus, which already benefits from a ban on the construction of gas station and doesn't have to worry about the public health consequences of these. So I hope that we have robust public engagement and that we listen to the most impacted voices.
Yeah, because that's who gets it done, really, is the people. And I appreciate these conversations that we have about gas stations and about gas ovens and stoves and all that, because that's really, it's air quality, but it's not really someplace that I'm completely immersed in. So these conversations with you are helpful for me as well. And what it's my wheels are turning right now about testimony and getting a cohort together about this. I think when I very first started, this was going on, gas station stuff was happening, but there wasn't like a clear, this is what we're doing with gas stations until I started talking to you, for me personally. So I think it's going to be very important to do that community engagement. And I just want to assure you and the rest of the team that my mind is now, you know, as a community organizer, my mind is now, you know, PHAS is done. Public health overlay zone is being worked on, not done, being worked on. And I think this next step for me, besides all my work in West Eugene, is to support you with this and all the work that you've done with gas stations and stoves and things like that. So I appreciate that. So folks, there you have it. We have talked about a lot with gas stations, pollution, leaking underground storage tanks, how a gas station ban can work, what's happening locally. And we just want to make sure that you all have some information, you have some knowledge. And that's what this podcast is all about. It's to help people understand what's going on in their community and how it can impact them and what steps they can take to make sure that they're as safe and as healthy as they can be in their homes. So, and I also want to clearly state that we are appreciative of all the agencies and elected officials who work on these matters. This work is hard. These issues are important and they're difficult decisions to make and they take a lot of conversation. So shout out to all the agencies for the work that you do and reach out to us whenever you need some support, because that's what we do. We do people. So Mason, it is always nice to have you here on the show with me. It's a good conversation. I feel like it's a safe space for us to be silly. This portion of the conversation was a little bit heavier, I think, because it was getting into emotions of council. And so I appreciate the sensitivity with this. And it's really nice to have you on the show. And do you have anything that you want to say at the end here before we wrap up and say our goodbyes?
No, I don't have anything else to add. Yeah, don't hesitate to reach out to Arjory or I on the topic. You know, you can find our contact information on beyondtoxics.org. And if you're interested and live in Eugene and want to testify, or don't live in Eugene and want to testify, you know, get in contact. Let's figure out a way to, you know, really platform these issues and the public health consequences and the importance of incorporating public health into land use decision making.
Yeah, you did have something to say. So thank you for saying that. Again, I am Arjory. This is Why We Do the Work. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.